You're listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves.
Welcome to Atlanta Baseball Talk and show number 353. Today is Sunday, October 2nd, and my name is Hamilton. I'm joined by Steve and Curtis today for a somewhat bittersweet show as we wrap up the 2016 campaign and we say goodbye to the Ted. But before we get to it, remember you can always find us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com. You can always find us at our new home at BlogTalk.radio. And you can follow us on Twitter at ATL Baseball Talk and check us out on Facebook. So guys, tonight we will talk about the end of Freddie's hitting and on-base streak. We will explore the options at skipper for next season. And we'll hand out our 2016 awards. But first, sayonara Turner Field. And as far as these things go, we hardly knew you. 20 seasons in the book. So guys, both of you were able to attend games this weekend. Kurt, you were there last night for a win. Stevie, you were there today for yet another great win. And we want to hear some of your experiences from that. But let's just do a quick rundown of the history of the Ted. It opened in 1997. Turner Field has hosted the NLDS a total of 11 times. I think we maybe won one. We hosted the NLCS four times, won World Series. We'll forget that one quickly. We did an NL Wild Card game in 2012, the first in baseball history, and the 2000 Major League Baseball All-Star game. So it's certainly seen some highs as well as some lows. But let's just start with this weekend and the closing ceremony. And Curtis, since you were there with Saturday night, for the 5-3 Braves win. Let's start with you. Anything you want to share from Saturday night?
It was a great crowd. It wasn't quite a sellout like it was today, but it was a big crowd. There was probably 35,000-37,000 people there, and they were very animated, very into the game. It was a fun experience, but there was definitely a sort of a pall over the place. And it was interesting that, like, as you sort of were celebrating all of this, that it was weird because there was almost a sense like that the Braves weren't just leaving Turner Field, that they were leaving town.
Yeah.
I mean, granted they are, but I mean, it seemed that there was an undercurrent of that there, like that some people were potentially never going to see another Braves game because they were not going to. And I mean, that might be a little hyperbolic that they were not going to drive to Cobb County, but I think it was definite that there were people that were at that stadium last night who will not see nearly as many Braves games going forward because they live down in the city and live near the park and, now see this sort of as an abandonment by the team that they're moving out to Cobb County. So,
yeah, well, so Kurt, let me ask you, because surely there were many more mentions of SunTrust Park today than there were Saturday night. But were there any mentions of SunTrust Park? Because pretty much whenever it got mentioned today, there were a smattering of boos each time.
No, it wasn't brought up at all. I mean, really, last night was all about the game. Aaron Blair pitched great. Freddie Freeman hit another home run. It was a well-played game. There were lots of Tigers fans there. But I mean, I'm sure you're going to get that. You know, the Tigers are, it's a pretty big national brand, and there's so many people from the Midwest that live in Atlanta now. So, but no, not really. There wasn't really much mention. John Schuerholz was the guy that ripped down the number last night, which I guess was cool. But I felt like toward the end, it would be more players than it was executives. And obviously there's no underestimating what he meant to the Atlanta Braves. But I guess I was kind of hoping it was going to be Hank Aaron or something like that.
So, yeah.
No, but I mean,
although Hank had done it.
Yeah. They also used Hank Aaron so much today, which was even more fitting that they wouldn't just sort of use him in that capacity, that he got to do so much more, which he did today.
So last night, bittersweet, but also that sort of weird dynamic of, because I think, you know, people in Cobb County are like, finally, I get to go to a Braves game. Which is the counterpoint to all those Atlanta fans saying, well, I guess they're gone for good now, which is, I don't know, it's bittersweet. All these articles, Curtis, you were passing around the articles about how the Braves have just basically fleeced the city and, you know, taken advantage of the city. And then there was another one in Yahoo Sports that said, we hardly knew you. I mean, like, the Ted didn't even have time to establish an identity. So I think that any kind of farewell was going to be, you know, it's not like Wrigley Field or even a stadium half that old, obviously. So, Stevie, what about you? I mean, you started to talk about it. I find the booing telling when they talk about Centrus Park.
Well, and that was really the only negative energy of the day. I mean, it was really a great, great day. And I thought that the Braves did a great job, except for one part. I'll get to that in a second. I mean, the opening was fantastic. The sort of all Turner Field team, one guy at each position, was really cool. I may have been more excited to see Fuki than anybody, because you don't see Furcal anymore, you know? So it was really cool to see him. Sheffield, I thought, was pretty cool to have him in right field. LaRoche at first, I would have preferred McGriff, but I guess he wasn't available. But that was pretty neat, you know? And then having Smoltz, Glavine, and Maddux throw out the first pitch was really special. I mean, having the three of them walk out together from the center field wall, that was like goosebump stuff. It really was. That right. was really, really terrific. And, you know, look, the game was fantastic. The crowd was really fired up, like actually standing when there were two outs on guys and cheering when it was two strikes on guys, like all that exciting baseball stuff. It really did feel like a playoff game there because the fans were really, really fired up. And the, you know, in the post game, you know, I some people were mad at me on Twitter for insulting the parade of states that occurred. but it was boring and it went on for like 20 minutes and it was really just a time killer.
What was
so
it?
That the, so they, you know, they took out home plate and put it on a police escorted van along with Hank Aaron to drive it up to Cobb County.
Okay.
And so then there was a parade of states, the six states that make up the six states that are part of the broadcast network, right? So Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Tennessee, South Carolina, North Carolina. And it was, you know, so they tried to tie it in to like, you know, much like an Olympic parade, this will be our parade of states instead of a parade of countries.
Hmm.
But it really went on for a very long time.
Gotcha.
But then, you know, Smoltz and Scherholz and Bobby spoke, and that was pretty good. And then the, you know, they fired off confetti cannons, which people really enjoy. That was a lot of fun. And it was over. It was very, it was weird at the end. It, you know, all of a sudden it was just like, no more.
No more.
No more Turner Field, yeah.
I'm surprised that Ted Turner didn't play some part in it more. You know, Kurt, you had mentioned on a tweet or a text to me that you thought he might be the final one or Hank Aaron. I'm surprised that he didn't. So, Stevie, he was there today, though? Is that true?
Well, so I could be wrong.
Yeah.
Like you could see President Carter and Rosalind sitting down, like, in the third row, and there was a guy with white hair and a baseball cap on that wasn't Bill Bartholomew.
Mm-hmm.
And it certainly looked like Ted, but I didn't see anything on social media about Ted being there. You'd think one of the beat writers or something would have mentioned it.
Yeah.
I would assume they invited Ted, for God's sakes. You'd figure they tried to get him involved. Maybe he just, you know, wasn't available or wasn't interested.
Just didn't have the interest. So then who ended up pulling down the last number? It was Bobby and Scherholz together?
So it was Bobby and Scherholz together, flanked by all the players who were introduced at the beginning of the game.
The Turner Field All-Stars or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And some of those guys, like LaRoche, Freddie Freeman won the first baseman, the fans pick for first all-time Brave first baseman at Turner Field.
Right.
But obviously he was in the game. And right field was Brian Jordan, which I guess he was working the game. I don't know.
No, he was in
was
left.
Was he there?
He was the left.
Because I was trying to figure out why Sheffield was there, because Sheffield didn't win any of that. But
well, I think that Sheffield and LaRoche were there because they needed warm bodies.
Just to stand out there.
You know, basically, yeah.
Yeah.
And they were, you know, there was big name recognition. I mean, it was cool to see Sheffield.
Sure. And he was, I mean, he had some moments at Turner Field throughout his career, which brings me to, you know, let's go beyond this weekend. As we look past, over these past 20 years, there's some highlights there. I don't know if you guys, if there's a moment or a couple of moments that stand out as a, you know, a Ted moment, you'll always remember that moment. You know, I'll start since you guys had this weekend.
Sure.
You know, for me, my favorite memory was actually, I was there with you guys. It was there on April 20th in 2010 against the Phillies. and I remember that the Phillies were better than us. I just remember looking up at the the big Jumbotron, and all the Phillies had averages over 300. And then ours came up, and I felt like you know, Nate McLouth was leading the team with 263 or something like that. But we were down 3-0, headed into the ninth. We scored 3 in the ninth to tie it, and then Braves legend Nate McLouth hit a walk-off homer to win it. And the thing that I remember most about it was that all the people ran out into the dugout, into the clubhouse, so that he had no one to greet him when he crossed the plate. Yes, you guys remember that?
I do. So that he went into an empty dugout.
Yeah, he went to an empty dugout. It was just great. It was a great moment. And actually, I watched it again today on YouTube, and it was really funny. But for me, I think it says something that I really couldn't think of a great memory that was like stood out beyond a personal memory, right? I mean, Turner Field saw a lot of, I have to say, saw more bad memories than good ones for me. I mean, even when we were winning, it wasn't great. We had a lot of bad playoff losses there. I lived out of town for a lot of the Braves' tenure at the TED. And I would always get grief from other fans how the Braves couldn't fill a stadium for a playoff game, that we had bad fans. And I know, and my defense every single time was like, well, we got the, you know, when you win so much and you're sort of a boring team, you get the 4 o'clock game on a Tuesday.
Right.
And, you know, and the stadium holds 47,000 people. It's hard to fill those stadiums. And meanwhile, it's Red Sox fans whose stadium holds 30,000 people. And so it was tough. But, you know, it's frustrating. I was just frustrated by the Braves' run at the TED. We had that high moment in 95 when we won the World Series, and I kept wanting that to be at the TED. I keep forgetting that that was at Fulton County Stadium. You know, and for me, I think if anything sums up the TED for me, it was the infield fly rule call against Andrelton Simmons and the Cardinals in that play-in game. Stevie, I know you were there.
Yeah.
When we threw all the fans. I know you were leading the charge to throw all the litter onto the fields, but
I was throwing the mustard jars.
Right.
Yes.
And I've moved on from that. I still hate Sam Holbrook. I hope everyone else does as well. But I don't know. I mean, so I hate to be negative about it, but as I was reflecting over 20 years at Turner Field, there weren't a lot of like great monumental moments that stood out on the good side. It seemed like a lot of them, unfortunately, stood out on the bad side. I don't know how you guys feel. Stevie, what are your thoughts?
Well, I have sort of two sides of it. Like one side of it, just emotionally, and it really hit me today and it, sort of unexpectedly, was I brought all my three boys to all their first baseball games at the TED. And aside from like, you know, a game at Marlins Park, and they've seen all their baseball games at Turner Field. And me and my boys go a lot.
Right.
And so there's a, you know, I have a big emotional connection to it now. In terms of things, and I really only zeroed in on things I was in person for. And Ham, I think you were with me. The 2005 NLDS against the Astros, when McCann hit that home run off of Clemens, weren't you there?
I don't think I was, because I think I remember watching that here in Boston.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry.
But so that was an amazing moment. That's all right. And two more. Hayward's home run on his opening day.
Yep.
I mean, the place was just bonkers. But the most bonkers was 2010, game three against the Giants, coming back 1-1 after what's-his-face. Oh, I can't remember. The St. Louis Cardinals pitcher that stopped being able to pitch, and then he became an outfielder.
Oh, yeah. And then he played for us. Curtis.
And then he played for us. I can't think of his name. Maybe one of us will think of it. And he tied it. He won the game in extra innings, game two in San Francisco. And it comes back here. And that Eric Hinsky home run.
Yes.
Where we took the lead. I mean, I've never felt the stadium shake more than that home run. It was really the best atmosphere I've ever experienced at Turner Field. So
yeah, good. I was with you at that game.
Yeah, right. Me, you, and my oldest son were there.
Followed That's by right. the three errors by the other guy's name, whom I can't remember.
Yeah, Brooks Conrad.
Brooks Conrad.
Yeah, the game did take an awful turn.
Yeah, Curtis, what about you? What stands out in your memory bank for Turner Field?
Rick Ankiel,
nice.
Ankiel. Yeah, I guess it's the same sort of stuff. I mean, there were cool things. The Hayward thing, that Frank Gore hit a home run in his first game, I think. I was also at the game when McCann hit the home run off of Roger Clemens. Obviously, I just said I was at the game with Steve when Hinsky, and that was probably honestly, I've been to SEC championship games. I've been to NFL playoff games. That Hinsky home run after that was, that's one of the loudest stadiums I've ever been in my entire life.
I remember walking into the stadium that, and people were like chopping and chanting just in the concourse before the game. Like Turner Field was fired up that night, man. Really, yeah. Just amazing.
Yeah. Hot crowd. And I mean, yeah. It was great because it was so, I mean, not that there weren't Giants fans, but because obviously San Francisco is so far away, it was actually a playoff game in Atlanta where there were so many Braves fans. I mean, it was filled to the brim with Braves fans, which added to that element. And of course, again, you know, I was looking, there was something was posted today and it was sort of like top 20 moments in Turner Field history. And a lot of them, I mean, I guess the thing that sort of exists around Turner Field is nothing really came out of Turner Field. A lot of them were there, you know, it was like Chipper hitting the home run off of, what's his face? Jeez, we're really doing good with the names here. The guy that used to close for the Phillies and then was with DC, the jerk that got in the fight with Bryce Harper.
Papelbon.
You know, like him hitting a home run off of Papelbon, it was like his last at bat, the walk-off home run.
Right.
But there was older stuff that I sort of had forgotten about, like Galarraga hitting a home run in his first game back after returning from his fight against cancer. And you don't really think about games all the way back. But, I mean, even going – like I was at a game – when we were in the NLCS against the Diamondbacks and Maddux was pitching. And I think Maddux was pitching against Schilling or against Randy Johnson. And so we were really fired up, but it was already to the point where the place was not sold out. And the fan, you know, the national media was starting to kill Atlanta fans for that stuff. But it was already, you kind of felt like the Braves were on that really bad streak of sort of letting you down in the playoffs. And sure enough, the first inning, I mean, Maddux, who won 87 gold gloves, committed like two errors himself, gave up like three unearned runs in the first inning. And I know if you look at these stats, they're probably wrong, but I was like, well, that about sums it up. Yeah. So, but I was at Randy Johnson's perfect game, which is really
I was
amazing.
Too. Kurt, I didn't know you were there.
Yeah, I mean, that was really cool, even if it was another player. I mean, just to be part of something as historical is witnessing it. I mean, it's pretty amazing that you witness. I don't know how many perfect games have been thrown in the history of baseball, but it's not a ton.
Like 30, 35. There, yeah, it's not a ton.
To have been there as part of that was pretty phenomenal.
I agree, and it feels like – and maybe this is part of it's not the Ted's fault, it's the team's fault. But you look at 1997, we opened. We hit 3.4 million in attendance that year. We were second in the league, averaged 42,000 a game. And then it just steadily declined. And last year, we were 13th in the league, 2 million. So 1.5 million less over the course of a season. We averaged 24,000 a game. It just feels like, I don't know, the Ted just started off so strong, and then we just, as the Braves sort of struggled through this last stretch, people didn't show, and just the Ted felt, I don't know, I for me, I don't have a ton of fond memories. And Stevie, I don't have, I mean, not to disparage the memories with your sons and stuff like that, but I don't think we're going to look back and be like, wow, the Ted was really that ballpark that was historic.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, you know, they didn't really win anything there. And yeah.
Was 96, did they play the 96 World Series at Turner Field?
Nope.
No.
That was at Fulton County. That's what I thought.
It didn't open until 97.
Yeah, okay. And they tore down Fulton County in 97 as well.
But obviously the fans going into the new stadium is a beautiful stadium. And I went the Olympics. I don't know if you guys went to the Olympics when it was there, but that was really cool. I mean, I saw Michael Johnson run in the Olympic Stadium. You know, I mean, there was a really neat facility. So it was kind of cool to see that transfer over. And I mean, you got to figure the Braves coming off of back-to-back World Series and frankly should have been back-to-back World Series wins. And then coming into 97 into Turner Field, that the energy was going to be pretty high to have a new state-of-the-art stadium and the best team in baseball playing at the time. So.
It's true. And I love, I mean, especially compared to Fulton County Stadium, I love Turner Field. I just like it's a good vibe there. I'm gonna miss it. I will miss it.
To add one thing that I didn't include when I was talking about going last night, it's a beautiful baseball park. It's a shame. I mean, I was there and I know there are aspects of it that are not, it's too big. It's too dark, you know, all those types of things. It's astonishing that they are not going to be playing baseball in that facility.
I know. I mean, great sidelines. You're always
greed and corruption and waste at its best is what's playing out with Turner Field.
Yeah. All right, guys, so we're going to check in on a couple of headlines from the week, but first let's take a quick break. Okay, we're back, and let's look at one headline from this week. Freddie Freeman ended the longest hitting streak and on-base streak by anyone in the majors this season. I won't bring up any ties to Matt Kemp's arrival because I don't want Steve to eat crow. At least during the show.
Or don't also bring up that he didn't beat Uglas' hitting streak.
That's really the story here.
Sorry. That's a sub-story. But guys, this is the Freddie we want, we love, that we need. So, Curtis, I'll start with you. Any thoughts on the hit streak? And do you think, you know, if healthy, Freddie played 157 games this season. I think that would come as a surprise to all of us. We're going to get to our biggest surprises.
And think about the start of the season with the wrist and the thumb and the shot and like all that crazy stuff.
Just shocking.
Sorry.
No, I'm just
Did we ever? I mean, I'm sure we touched on it at some point over the season about trading Freddie Freeman. Did we ever collectively say? I mean, I don't remember if our thoughts were any ever so low that we were like, yeah, God, get rid of the guy.
No, we said he should not ever be traded.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah.
But we certainly talked about, you know, during the first 2 months when he was so inconsistent, we were like, this is the guy that all the money is sunk into.
Yeah.
Right. You know, this needs to be our superstar player, and he's not a superstar. Freddie became a superstar this year.
Well, that's the question. And Stevie, finish that thought. Curtis will come to you. I mean, you think if healthy, Freddie can carry this productivity into next season? Is this the real Freddie?
Well, we don't know, but I want to think so. Maybe he found a little bit more of his man strength this year and some consistency and having more guys around him. I mean, yeah, I'm absolutely willing to believe this is the Freddie that we really have now. And he will absolutely be that foundation that we need. I mean, it's very exciting seeing what he did for a really prolonged amount of time.
What percentage of his success do you attribute to Kemp? Having someone with power, someone that's, you know, a right-hander batting behind him.
Well, in fairness, Freddie was going on those crazy tears well before Kemp came.
Yeah.
But also, in fairness, the entire team started hitting better when Kemp arrived. And Freddie, of course, went on his hit streak after Kemp arrived. So, I don't know, 26%?
All right. All right, Curtis, what about you?
27%.
Yes, I knew you would be better. But I mean, do you think this is the Freddie? I think this is the real deal if he's healthy. You know, it's all if he's healthy. You see, you mentioned the wrist and the big concerns at the beginning of the season. But let's assume he stays healthy and maybe, you know, 157 games shocks us. Curtis, you think this is the real deal? Can we count on this for next season?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we want to take a corner here. I mean, and believe that this is the guy that we hope he will be. I don't think it's any small concession that, you know, the guys in front of him were getting on base too. We shouldn't forget that, about how great Inciarte was in the second half, about how solid Garcia was in the second half, at least during a lot of that run that Freeman was on. So, and maybe Dansby gets moved up to two to start next season. And if he hits anything like what he was hitting at the end of this year. And God, how fun was he this weekend?
Oh, the two double plays. Oh, unbelievable.
Sorry, to change the subject, just salivating, looking ahead. But yeah, I mean, you know, what I think was missing so much in that team a couple of years ago when it was all or nothing, all the home runs or all the strikeouts, is that the whole team was like that. Even Simmons and, you know, guys that are supposed to be getting on base were like that. Well, the thing that's different about this team that they put together now is it's not all like that. They've got two guys that are like that. But a lot of the other guys are get on base guys or on base percentage guys. They're contact guys. And so there's more depth and dynamics to this team. And I think it slots well with Freeman and Kemp being the 3-4 guys that they can be the power hitters. And the contact guys there, at least in the case of Freeman, I mean, he did have I'm looking at the stats. He had the fourth most strikeouts of any first baseman, but he also, you know, had the third highest batting average, had the third most home runs, the second most triples, I will add.
Which is crazy. And Curtis, I was looking at those strikeouts. A lot of those came early in the season. Like he was number one in the National League or very close at the top before the All-Star break in strikeouts. So even those have come down in the second half for Freddie.
Yeah, and his OBP is higher than Miguel Cabrera. His slugging is higher than Miguel Cabrera. Paul Goldschmidt's behind him in all these numbers too. So, you know, and this is with, like Steve was talking about, a sort of a bad stretch to start the season, some shaky episodes during the season. You figure if he's just, not that you can expect that he's going to be on top of it all year long, but I mean, gosh, it would. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I truly believe that this is the guy that and he seems calmer. I don't know if it's having a child. Maybe there's too much perspective being put there, but and by me, but, you know, because that certainly is not a calming thing, I will say.
It can be until they start crawling. Well, I mean, yeah. For me, the thing that's heartening and, I, you know, bigger than Freddie is that I think we would all agree our offense is not quite there yet in terms of the pieces. Right. I think
right,
that, you know,
right.
And yet in September, we were the best offense in the National League and we were not playing a bunch of chumps. We were playing the Nats a bunch. We were playing the Mets, both playoff teams, both, you know, contenders in the East. Good pitching from the Marlins. You know, we played a lot of good teams
and the Tigers
and we hit yeah. and we won. And Freddie's obviously core to that, but if we can add a few more pieces and Freddie continues to feel confident and the Braves continue to win, I mean, the time is now, right? I mean, I think all of a sudden 2017 feels like we could compete. We actually could compete in 2017, and I think obviously Freddie is a critical part of that.
Yep.
So let's continue on, you know, what 2017 might look like, and let's look at the skipper position. So reportedly this week, the Braves began the process of interviewing in-house candidates for their, I guess, vacant managerial position, which is a weird thing to say because it's not really vacant. And they still have plans to speak with other options from outside the organization. So here's the list. Internally, obviously, it's Eddie Perez, Terry Pendleton, Bo Porter was interviewed as well. Outside of the organization, the two top candidates, Bud Black from the Dodgers, Red Sox bench coach Tory Lavullo, are being some of the names that are thrown around. And of course, there's our boy Brian Snitker, who went 57-64 as a skipper this season after taking over for Kurt's favorite, Freddy Gonzalez. So guys, you guys introduced this. I've rehearsed it and I still can't get it right. The snitcometer from last week, and we're bullish on Snitty last week. So let's revisit it. And so two things. What I want you guys to do is, first of all, use the snitcometer in terms of what you think will happen. So 0 meaning he won't get the job, 10 meaning he has the job. So what do you think the Braves will do? But then also tell us what do you want to happen. And Curtis, let's start with you. Where are you on the snitcometer?
I think I said it was a 9 last week. I'm probably an 8 this week. And the only reason
is that what you think will happen or want to happen? Are they the same thing?
Yeah, I think they're the same thing. I mean, these names that, you know, Ron Gardenhire and Bud Black and guys like that, or these in-house guys. I mean, Bo Porter was not a great manager in Houston,
yeah.
So the only reason I say that is because the reporting that I read, which I forget where it was from, if it was Dave O'Brien or somebody else, but that they were really impressed with Terry Pendleton.
Yeah, I read that too.
So that would be the only thing that I think would throw a sort of a potential roadblock to Snitker, is that Terry Pendleton's been a very loyal subject to this organization for a long time. Mm-hmm. And that maybe Snitker's been great, but maybe they want some fire because it's new players. It's going to be a lot of young players that are going to be coming up to this team in the next couple of years. And he's a guy that's, you know, can show him, you know, his MVP and they know that he was part of the game. So that would be the only reason I would think that Snitker would not get the job. But I think he should. He's done a masterful job.
Right. And I mean, TP would be my second choice. I agree. I mean, I would love for TP. I love TP. And before Snitker came and did his thing, I think I was with you. But yeah, I mean, since I said it, I'm with you. I think it's an 8. I worry that the Braves are going to try to get cute, try to think about PR, try to think, you know, bring in a big name. I don't want Bud Black. I do not want Bud Black.
And please, no.
And if we're going to go with a relatively unknown manager like this Tory Lavullo guy, why not just be Snitker? He's here. players love him. I mean, everybody on the team is advocating for him. Inciarte, Peterson have come out this week, Bobby. So I'm with you. Stevie, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, a 9 on what I think will happen and a 10 on what I want to happen.
Yeah.
Yep.
I agree. All right, guys. So you guys said last week that you wanted the Braves to extend Jim Johnson. And, of course, since they listened to the show, he was given a 2-year extension over the weekend, making you guys seem incredibly smart. So any thoughts on that? Any surprises? Does 2 years feel like too long for someone at Johnson's stage in his career / age?
First, I'm grateful the copy listens to the show.
Yep.
Feels good. I haven't seen what the dollar figures are, but I imagine they went to him and said, look, you know, you are going to be an attractive piece in the free agent market. We'll give you 2 years. And I think it was the right thing to do. They need that sort of veteran stability for the closer's position, at least to start the year. We don't know what's going to go on with Vizcaino. You know, Cabrera still walks a ton
Wild.
Of people. So he is absolutely the right guy for the job. He's in-house. He likes the organization. He came out today already and was like, wherever they need me, I'll be happy to play. I think it's just perfect.
I agree. And I think that, you know, it's one of those deals where the first you sign him for 2, hoping you get 1 good one. I mean, I think that,
right.
You know, next year, you're right. We have no line of sight to a closer for next season. I think Vizcaino, for all the reasons you said. So let him be our closer. Let him transition into maybe whatever that next chapter is. And if we get 2 good years, that would be fantastic. Yeah. Curtis, any thoughts from you?
No, I guess he's younger than I thought he was. He's only 33. I mean, he looks like he's 45, but and they can always trade him.
Yeah, that's true.
They've done it before, you know. So
right, if Vizzy or Cabrera start to figure it out, then right, he's a good trade piece.
Yeah, or he's a great setup guy too. So
yeah,
and a good presence in the back end of the bullpen. Been there, done that, right? All right, guys, so let's move into our shot in the dark. This is the last one of the season. You guys can continue to play along at home if you like, but this is it for us. So these are our crazy predictions for the week. As always, we'll start with our listener shot in the dark. So this one was a good one. It came from Braves Options Guy via Twitter. He said that the final game at Turner Field would end with the exact same score as the first game at Turner Field, which was Braves 5, visitors 4. Well, the margin of victory was the same, but unfortunately the score was not the same. So while the Braves were glorious winners in their last game at the TED, Braves Options Guy, you were not. Sorry.
You know, I was really rooting for it because I thought that was a really neat one. But then once it got to like the 6th, 7th inning, I was like, sorry, Braves Options Guy.
Yeah, sorry.
Did you do you guys know who started the first game at Turner Field?
I heard it today, so I won't answer.
Ham, any thoughts?
Danny Nagel.
Yes.
Do you know who got the first win at Turner Field?
Heard this today.
Brad Klontz.
Brad Klontz.
Yes, that's right.
So his first hit was Chipper. First homer was Michael Tucker. First save was Mark Wohlers.
Yeah. There's so Saturday night, last night, did Justin Upton hit the homer after Markakis hit his homer?
No, I thought it was before. I thought Justin's was in the 6th or 7th inning, and then Markakis's was like in the 8th inning.
So that means Markakis hit the last homer at Turner Field.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because Markakis hit
right.
I was with my kids and we left sort of 7th, 8th inning, and Markakis hit his homer after we had left, or as we were sort of making our way to the car, and we saw Justin hit his home run.
Good. Okay, excellent.
Good fandom there, Curtis.
Not yeah, sure. Well,
no, I know. I know the circumstances.
Why
no, you're off the hook. Kurt, you're wrong. You're wrong.
Why?
Markakis hit his homer bottom of the 6th.
What?
Justin hit his homer top of the 7th. I'm looking at MLB right now.
So Justin Upton hit the last homer at
Justin
Turner Field.
Justin Upton hit the last homer at Turner Field. Although he made the last out at Turner Field today.
Freeman hit the last sacrifice fly.
And we'll always remember it.
Yeah. Yes.
Did we knock the Tigers out of the playoffs too?
We sure did.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I was sitting next to Tigers fans today. They were morose.
I love it.
We sort of killed them and the Marlins during the stretch that we had at the
end. So good. And almost took out the Mets, too. Yeah, Justin was called out on strikes to end the game today. So he was the final out at Turner Field.
God, it's so unlike Justin Upton to strike out.
I know. At least to be called out. Usually he goes down swinging. All right. So let's look at what we predicted for this past week. So I was out of town, but I still predicted that the Braves would score 35 or more runs this week. And they were on a pace to do it. They started out strong. They tapered off against the Tigers, and they ended the week with 32 runs, just below my prediction. Stevie, you predicted that Folty would come back and go 7 2/3 and give up one or less runs. He did give up one or less, but he only went 5. This was in the 12-2 rout of the Phillies. So, Stevie, no. And then, Curtis, you had some interesting math last week, but you did predict that the Braves would go 5-1 this week and match their win total from last season. And you were right that they would win 5 games, but they ended up with 68 wins on the season. You said they would end up with 67, which is what they had last season. So bad math, but still, I'm not going to penalize you. I'm feeling generous here, and I'm going to give it to you because somebody needs to win. I don't think any of us have actually gotten a shot in the dark in 2 months now. So, Curtis, well done, my friend. You got it.
Congratulations, Kirk. I'm really happy for you.
Thank you so much.
Really happy.
Note that Kurt won the last shot in the dark for Turner Field.
It's going down in the record book. So, Curtis, and with that, you also win for the season. You are the shot in the dark champion of the season. So, congratulations.
The shoddiest and the darkest.
You're the shoddiest and the darkest winnerist of the season. So, congrats on that.
Thank you so much.
Yes. And we're not going to do postseason shots in the dark because the Braves aren't in it and blah. All right.
But maybe next week we'll do a off-season for the Braves shot in the dark.
Yes, we will. No, and we've done that in the past, which Steve continues to, you know, pay my kids' college tuition with some of his bets that he likes to make. But we'll get to that later.
Mine involves Martin Prado playing for the Braves next year.
The Marlins already re-signed him.
I'm not giving up hope on this.
It's one of them sign and trades that they do in baseball.
We're giving them Dwight Howard.
I like the end of the season sign and trades. It's a power move. Unprecedented. All right, guys, we are going to do some of our end of the season awards ourselves, but let's take a quick break first. All right, we are back, and it's time for our season wrap-up. We have 5 categories that we're going to cover this year. Curtis, let's start with you, and we'll start with an easy one. Who is your 2016 Braves MVP?
Chase Darno.
Yeah, because he's so dreamy.
He is.
Well, he's a musician.
His band is awesome. It's clearly Freeman. I mean, we've obviously sort of talked a lot about what he's done for the team this year, and I don't really think I need to add any more. It's Freddie Freeman.
Yeah. Freeman.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I just mix it up so we didn't all say the same thing. For me, I think it's obviously Freeman. I went with Snitker. I mean, it's part of the reason I want him back next season is, as anyone who listens to the show knows, I really had written this season off. I just repeatedly said, I don't want to win this season. Whatever you do, don't do anything this season that might jeopardize long-term success. But Snitker made me care for this season. We came down the stretch. He kept the team focused, inspired, very competitive. I think he has set us up to be competitive out of the gate next season. Obviously, the players play the game, the managers manage them. But I think Snitker deserves consideration at least for the value that he's brought to the team. And I know he's not a player, so that the MVP doesn't really work. But most valuable person to the team.
Do we know where the Braves end up with their pick?
4th.
Is 4th.
Yeah,
okay. Because there's like a whole bunch of teams that have 68 wins.
Yeah, and if we had actually made up the game against the Marlins, we're in this we're one less loss than the other two teams in the National League, the Diamondbacks and whoever's in the Central.
No, it's the Padres and the Reds.
Right.
So, and then in the National League, the Rays also won 68 games.
Yeah, right? No, the Rays are ahead of us. The Twins are ahead of us.
No, the Twins won 59 games.
They're behind us, you mean?
Ahead of us.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so if we had actually made up the game and lost it, it would be a different story. It's interesting how that works out. So, okay, Steve, let's go to you. Who was your least valuable player for the Braves in 2016?
Ibar.
Yeah.
I mean, Ibar was awful, right? And he was one of the reasons I was buying into the team will be better, that Coppy was saying in the preseason or during spring training. I mean, he was just dreadful. Yeah, I don't know what else to say. I mean, not only was he terrible at the plate, he seemed disinterested the first couple months, had terrible range at short.
Sloppy in the field.
Awful.
Sloppy
in the field. Awful. Awful.
Yeah. Curtis, what about you?
Yeah, I would throw it with Ibar. I know I used Freddie before, and you guys really got mad at me that I said that. But, you know, on top of that, to add to Steve's point, really the main reason I feel that they had Eric Ibar, I don't think they had ever any intention of him being around long term, but they were really hoping that he would come in and play really well and they would actually get some return for him. It was great that they were actually able to get some pieces for him, but I don't know that, Cade Sefikwa is really, going to be a long-term catching answer for us or something like that. So, and Mike Avilas, who they got, who of course they immediately released. So not much in return for what I'm sure they were hoping was going to be a nice return when they traded Eric Ibar.
Yeah.
So Ham, quickly, sorry, I have a correction.
Yes.
The Braves are fifth in the draft next year. Twins, Reds, Padres, Rays, Braves.
You were right though. I mean, you said the Rays were before, so.
Yeah, I knew. I just. Oh, I had four in my mind somehow.
That stinks.
Fifth will be fine.
Yeah, I guess so. For me, I thought Ibar, but again, I wanted to make it interesting. I guess a close runner-up, and I didn't choose Freddie Gonzalez, just to be clear which Freddie we're talking about, was AJ. AJ, and I think he was he was a victim of his own success last season. Obviously, he played over his head last season, was so in the conversation for almost MVP of the Braves last season for all he contributed. This season, he really fell off a cliff. He only played 81 games. He hit .219, .243 OBP, two homers. We didn't really have it figured out at catcher this season. Flowers was okay. So
Wrecker was okay.
He was okay.
Like .285. You guys are kind of killing Anthony Wrecker. I mean, I know that obviously he's not going to be something that they're going to pay a lot of attention to, but he was better than okay, I think.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. You're right.
When you hit .219, you're not the victim of your past success. You're just awful.
You're awful. I mean, for a career, he's a .280 hitter.
He was just bad. He was just done.
He was sort of whiny at the end when he couldn't understand why he wasn't getting playing time.
Yeah.
Because you suck.
Yeah, he really was really, really bad there. I mean, I think Ibar had a better – I agree. I think we had higher expectations for Ibar, but I think, for a regular who played somewhat, I mean, he really was – he was bad. All right, so the next question is, and Curtis, let's start with you. What is the one thing that went exactly as you thought it would when the season began?
I hate to say that and I know that our feeling, which is sort of the point I made last week with the record being the same, which my math is wrong, but the record certainly being similar, was that I think last year when they were 67 and whatever they were, I personally didn't have any hope for this season. I thought they were going to be equally as terrible as this season. And the record sort of played out that way. I mean, how bad they were to begin the season, how bad they were under Freddie to get him fired. But as this season has ended with virtually the same record, obviously you're so much more optimistic about what's going forward with the team. But I think that them being one of the worst teams in baseball was sort of exactly what I expected was going to happen.
Yeah, I had the exact same thing. I mean, I think the path that it took to get there was a little different, which is what you were alluding to. I didn't think we'd be competitive at all, like we were this past month or so. But, yeah, I agree.
Or the 16 starting pitchers and all. I mean, there's a lot of things that went into us not being perhaps even better than we could have been. But, yeah, I mean.
Well, and I think that's where Snicker goes. And I meant to bring that up earlier. I mean, another credit to Snicker is he had 16 starting pitchers. Curtis, I think you said that was a record, right?
Yeah.
And to be able to stay competitive and not just have the wheels fall off and not just be this extended spring training is commendable, is remarkable. Stevie, what about you? What went as you thought it would?
Markakis. I expected Markakis, after having a full season under his belt and being able to really work out, and to be more of the offensive force that he was. And he really was, you know, started hitting home runs and continued to be that solid guy in the middle of the order. So I'll go with the improved Markakis.
All right, fair enough. So, Stevie, let's stay with you. So what's one thing that surprised you this season?
I'll do two quick ones. One, that they fired Freddie.
That was mine.
I saw no scenario, given the terrible lineup that he had, that Freddie was going to get fired. On a more positive note, that Dansby hit as well as he did. Like, yeah. I expected Dansby to hit, you know, 250 and just try to sort of get his bearings. But Dansby became like an actual force at the plate. It's so good. So good.
Yeah. I'll just jump in here. I agree. I thought that was the thing that surprised me, is why fire Freddie? At the time, it's just like, he's playing with a short deck. Who cares? Who cares? You know, right. Just let nobody manage the team. Let them just, you know, manage themselves. You know, the one for me was that Adonis actually is now a contender for starting third baseman. I mean, it's nice what Rio Ruiz has done here and is continuing to, you know, make progress. But I was shocked that Adonis was serviceable. I thought he was to be treading water, and he was a force. I mean, he was in the conversation for MVP too. He was consistently productive at third base, which was nice.
Curtis, that's really a great one, Hammy. I just want to add to it. I mean, not only did he start to hit, but after he got sent down and then came back up, all of a sudden he was like a good to above average at times third baseman, because he was awful at third.
Yeah. He really improved this season. And I love him. I love Adonis. Curtis, what about you? He's no Emilio Bonifacio. Sorry. Go
ahead. I don't know if you guys saw Bud Norris get released by the Dodgers. So a nice fleecing there for a guy who's not even pitching for them anymore. But on a different note, good on the good surprise, Inciarte being just.
Oh, yeah.
So good.
So good.
I can't wait till next season.
I guess the bad thing, and I don't know that I expected anything out of it. But the Hector Olivera thing, how badly that turned out in every conceivable way. And I think that we sort of collectively thought it was not going to turn out as well as they hoped on the field. But that's going to be a blemish that will sort of, and I mean, I for most casual fans, if you mentioned Hector Olivera to them right now, they wouldn't even remember that he was part of this operation. But right. I think Coppola, as he admitted, whenever it was, that Twitter convo that he had a couple of weeks ago, that was his big mistake. And that's sort of going to, maybe it'll give them pause going forward, chasing things like that, maybe getting hung up on players that they really want and kind of going after them at all costs. Maybe that will alter that dynamic some.
But I feel like we really dodged a bullet with Olivera. I mean, you know, Alex Wood, we miss him, but I think it could have been a lot worse. I think we could have rued that trade a long time, and ultimately I don't think we will. I mean, obviously it's horrible what he did, but I think we made out okay with that. When all things are, you know, when you sort of settle the balance sheet.
Sure, but I don't know that any of us saw that it was going to flame out like.
No, not at all. We all thought he was going to, I mean, Curtis, you and I thought he was going to hit over 12 homers this season for the Braves. We'll cover this next week. Stevie, the utter pragmatist, was obviously ahead of us on that one. Stevie, were you going to say something?
No, I was just going to say, and after the really good spring training he had.
Right.
Remember, he was hitting everything in spring training. He was leading all of spring training in hits for many, many weeks.
Yeah.
And then he led, never mind.
Stop it.
No, don't do it.
There's no good jokes to be had there. All right, so last one, I'll start. If you could have one do-over from this season, what would it be? For me, Stevie, you mentioned it. I think I would have brought up Dansby sooner and just cut ties with Ibar. Who cares what we got for him? I know we're trying to season him. Maybe he wasn't ready, but in hindsight, Dansby was ready. I think Dansby was ready, has always been ready for this. It seems like he's one of those you know, talents that can do that. So I wish that we had brought him up sooner so he had even more chance to get comfortable and be ready to be a everyday shortstop next season.
Stevie, I struggled to find one. you know, which is kind of good. Like, yeah, I toyed about Dansby, or should they have brought Ozzy up? And so really, I settled on, I wish they had just released Oliveira the day he was arrested.
Yeah.
Like, it's fine. Then I suppose they wanted him to, well, they wanted to do what they did, right? Have him go and play in the minors and rehab and hopefully look okay and see if they could trade him or whatever. And they ended up obviously turning him into Kemp. But I would have liked them to just cut ties and just take the high road on that one.
Me too. That's a good one. What about you, Curtis?
Maybe the way they handled Aaron Blair. He pitched great last night. He really did. He really looked wonderful. I think
serious,
he struck out
season high 10 strikeouts.
Yeah, right? Yeah. 10 strikeouts. I think he gave up one run when he got pulled, but he looked great. But just sort of that up and down when he looked really shaky at times. And I know that was sort of brought upon by the situation
all the
with
injuries
all the starting pitching. But I'm kind of with you guys. There's not a ton of stuff that played itself out. I would personally not have picked the Angels to win the World Series.
That's a little preview of next week's show.
Yeah. but no, I mean, it all sort of played it out. I mean, I think we needed once again sort of give kudos to Coppola. I mean, there were a lot of crafty little things that he did this year to build this team up on top of the big colossal ones that we saw. And it's exciting. I mean, I would generally say with last night, people are excited about the team going forward.
Well, and it's, you know, back to the being surprised that Freddie was fired. They did it with the hopes of this, what's happened these last couple months, being exactly what played out. They did not want this moribund team losing over 100 games as the way people remembered the last season before moving into the new stadium. I mean, they got way more than they bargained for, I think, in this turnaround. But this is what they wanted. So there was some vibe and momentum around the team, and it's exactly what happened. It wouldn't have happened with Freddie at the helm.
No. And I think they deserve credit for that, which we're giving to them.
Yeah.
You do a show week to week, it's easy to get sort of caught in the weeds and really feel every punch and every loss and not see the path to being competitive in 2017. So I think these guys deserve credit. They were saying all along, we will be competitive in 2017. And here we are, end of the season. I believe it. I'm excited for it. So they deserve a lot of credit. Now, there's an off-season ahead where there's still moves to be made, and there's still pitching to figure out. But we are, from where I stand, we're ahead of the curve. I'm surprised that we have rebuilt or retooled as quickly as we have.
No doubt. Yeah. I totally agree.
All right, folks. Well, that is the show for this week. So we're going to be back next week with our final wrap of the season. We can talk about Kurt and Steve's crazy, I'll just leave it at crazy, World Series predictions. Hopefully we might have a special guest, so please check that out. And as for now, thanks for listening. Remember, you can always find us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com. You can find past shows. You can read our blog and post comments. You can find us at BlogTalkRadio.com on Facebook, and hang out with us on Twitter at ATL Baseball Talk. So thanks again for listening, everybody, and go Braves.
Thanks for listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves. To find new shows, to post in our forum, or to send a comment, please visit us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com. Had to admit the problem.